This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Anna Burks joins me live in studio. She's a research librarian at Thomas Jefferson's Monticello, and she has made an exciting discovery, which I, of course, read about. Well, I got the email because I subscribed to...
Yes, that wasn't me personally that emailed you.
Yes, you didn't send me an email.
It's all automatic.
Yeah, I get the automatic email because I'm a fan of A Summary View, which is the blog of the Jefferson Library at Monticello. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, and that's whenever you come across something interesting, you put it up on the blog. So
that's
you can
right.
go in and subscribe to the blog and you'll get an email whenever there's a new
yes.
post.
Yeah, you can do that or you can just check it manually whenever you feel like it.
Yeah. So. Now, what I think is so interesting is your introduction to this latest post where you've made this real discovery, which is really fascinating, and you've titled it A Little Piece of Monticello. So well titled. You write about how you sometimes come across things. You don't necessarily start out to research them yourself. You'll get a call or an email from somebody, right?
Yeah, and actually rarely do I say to myself, well, I think I'll research such and such today. Usually it's at the behest of someone else. So
yeah, you just get a question from somebody saying, hey, can you look into this for me?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
That's the way it works.
And I remember the strangest request, you shared this with us last time, the strangest request you got from somebody was, what did Thomas Jefferson smell like?
Yeah, there's that one. There are many others, of course, that we could talk about anytime you want, but
yeah.
That's one of them.
Now, tell us about A Little Piece of Monticello. How did this investigation start?
Well, actually, I mean, it wasn't really a discovery that I made. We got an email from the archivists at Ohio State University who... They're processing the papers of, you know, so-and-so. And at the time, I wasn't really paying attention. They said, you know, we're processing so-and-so's papers, and we come across this document, and it appears to be a mortgage bond for Monticello, and we're really wondering, you know, what's the deal with this? What is this? What can you tell us about this? And so, you know, I went into our archives and looked at, you know, we have a finding aid that we can search, so I could zero in on another... you know, information about this sort of stuff.
But you'd never heard, just offhand, before looking into it, you'd never heard of any mortgage bonds for Monticello.
No. And so I found another one in our archives. It was slightly different from what they had. But so I found one of these. And so then I was looking in the meeting minutes of the Board of Trustees to try to get the background on this. What was this? And incidentally, I did add some more information to the blog today because, you know, after I posted my information about it, someone else, you know, one of our other staff members came to me and they said, oh, well, you know, I did a whole bunch of research on this and here's actually how it worked. And so what the foundation did was in order to financed the purchase of Monticello in 1923.
From the Levy family.
Right, yeah. Right. So Jefferson Monroe Levy owned Monticello in 1923 and finally decided that he was going to sell it. And so the foundation got themselves together. They incorporated themselves. And they, you know, of course, had to figure out how are we going to buy Monticello from Jefferson Monroe Levy. And part of the way that they did this was they... purchased bonds, and I'm not a math whiz, so if this sounds wrong to anyone out there, I wouldn't be surprised. They purchased bonds, and then when people made donations to them above a certain amount, $1,000, then they would present these certificates, these mortgage certificates, to these people as sort of a symbolic way of saying, thank you, you've helped us pay off part of Monticello's mortgage. And this is what had been found in the papers of so-and-so at Ohio State University. And so when I got back in touch with the woman there who had contacted me, I realized that this was Richard Byrd, Admiral Byrd, the polar explorer, who had apparently made a donation to Monticello and he'd gotten one of these certificates.
Wow. So, the Richard Byrd.
The yeah. Richard Byrd, yes, yes. And I sort of joked with her. I said, oh, you know, I when you said Byrd, I thought, oh, Byrds of Westover. And she's like, actually, he is a Byrd of Westover. So he's a descendant of that family, which is sort of another interesting factoid.
So we call it a mortgage bond, but it wasn't anything that you could redeem. It was more like a thank you note. Or,
exactly.
Or was it something you could redeem at some point?
No. It was, as far as I understand, the way it worked was they had made a donation, a monetary donation to Monticello, and Monticello then, at that point, sent them or presented them with this piece of paper.
That they could frame and then they could say,
right,
I own a little piece of Monticello.
Right. It's a very impressive looking document, but it's not worth any money at that point.
Yeah. So. And do we know, I guess, those bonds and those personal investments, that's what made it possible for the foundation to actually purchase Monticello from the Levy family.
Oh, yeah. 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 So they had, they financed it in different ways. And this is one of the ways that they finally paid the whole thing off.
Yeah.
But the early years of the foundation, they were trying very, very hard. They had all sorts of fundraising efforts that were underway because it was, you know, that was their major concern, basically, in the early years of the foundation. But they finally did it.
We're talking with Anna Burks, a research librarian at Thomas Jefferson's Monticello. The website is jeffersonlibrary.wordpress.com. It's the blog of the Jefferson Library called A Summary View, putting the blah, blah in blog since 2008. So refresh our memory here. Now, the Thomas Jefferson Memorial Foundation purchases Monticello from the Levy family.
Yes.
In 1923, is that right?
Well, I guess it would be
it
more proper to say
they,
right. They started the process of purchasing it, and they, of course, didn't eventually. They had it all paid off by 1940.
Wow. Okay. So, when did they take possession, though? Do we know?
In 1923.
In 23. So that's when they officially took possession.
Yeah.
They had the key. Who was the Thomas Jefferson Memorial Foundation? Was it a lot of blue hairs and got together and cared about the history, or was
mostly a group of businessmen who were based in New York City, and I do think that a lot of them did have Virginia roots, their families, or they were originally from Virginia, so it wasn't completely out of the blue that they decided to get interested in Monticello, but they had their original meeting quarters were in New York City, and it was a group of maybe 20 or so.
Really,
mostly men.
And the vision from the start was, let's preserve this in historic trust for the people of America in the future.
And yes, it was to preserve Monticello as a memorial to Jefferson, hence Thomas Jefferson Memorial Foundation.
Yeah. And did the idea from the start, do you know if it included tourism? I mean,
we're
going to open this house up in some fashion?
Yes. Yeah. I believe so.
Yeah. Do we know when those tours started or what they were like in the
very
beginning?
Well, the very next year they started doing tours, and they had various methods over the years, and I gather that tours were fairly informal at that point, and it also depended on, you know, whether they had a lot of visitors or not very many people. Sometimes people would be able to just walk through the house on their own. But they had, at one point, they had the local chapter of the Daughters of the American Revolution, I believe, who were serving as hostesses. And
like as docents and guides. And,
yeah.
Although one wonders how much research was actually going on compared to today. I mean, you know, the research today about Monticello and the history of Monticello is really impressive. What, you know, the team that you're a part of up there that the people do is really amazing. You know, it feels like every time I go up there, it's like, oh, they know something else, you know?
Well, yes, we are always discovering new information. I don't really know at that time, that's maybe a question for the head of visitor services or something. At this point, he's done a little research, I think, into the history of tour giving at Monticello. I don't really know what the training program at that time was for people who were giving tours of Monticello. But I think around 1951, Marie and Fisk Kimball, who were, Fisk Kimball was the chairman of the restoration committee at Monticello. So he was big into the, he had his fingers in all the pies of the running of Monticello, and his wife, Marie, who was the first curator. That's 1951 is when they decided to revamp the whole tour guide system that they had. And they, I think that it was not as structured before that. So in 1951, they decided, okay.
Became more of a programmed kind of thing.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. But people, tourists were stopping by even when Jefferson was alive. I mean, always been going on. Since the place was built, people have always been climbing the mountain to see this place.
Yeah, and I believe in the levee period also, people wanted to stop by. But at that point, it was a private residence. So I think that they did allow some, but they really, you know.
I'm sure they had to chase some folks off.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they kind of turned a few people down.
Very different today, of course, with the new visitor center. And if you haven't been up there and you haven't seen this, you're one of the few, because a lot of folks have been flocking up to see this new place. And it really is stunning, absolutely beautiful, an all-new museum and huge, huge gift shop up there with beautiful, beautiful things. And strongly encourage folks to get by and check it out, the new visitor center at Thomas Jefferson's Monticello, and new tours as well, right, that are going to be taking folks upstairs?
New types of tours, yeah. Since June, we've had the upstairs tours, behind-the-scenes tours, that's what they're called. Reaching for the, what are they called again? The behind-the-scenes tours, where you can go upstairs. And there's a new exhibit down in the lower part. Also, that I don't think there's a tour that accompanies that, but it's, you know, new stuff to see down there.
Yeah, yeah. So, and the kitchen is great too. I know the Daily Progress recently did a big thing about the kitchen. And...
Yeah, the kitchen was redone a few years ago, I think.
Yeah.
So, and they had the guy from that TV show in to do actual cooking.
Oh, really?
That's great. What's it called? A Taste of History, I think, is what that's called. This guy was doing this series of historic cooking adventures, I suppose. And so they had him in at Monticello and was actually cooking in the kitchen.
That's
so
great.
That's pretty cool.
Anna Burks is a research librarian at Thomas Jefferson's Monticello. So besides digging up these mortgage bonds, what else have you been working on? Anything else that just comes to mind that you've been looking into recently?
I spent an embarrassing amount of time on researching one of Jefferson's sisters last week. Her name is Mary Jefferson Bowling. And
my first reaction, as somebody who's done Jefferson research like yourself, my first reaction is, wow, that's so fascinating, because there's so little that's known about his immediate family.
It's very true. And, you know, for example, people ask a lot, you know, are there any portraits of Jefferson's wife, Jefferson's siblings, his family members, his parents? And there really aren't. And that's actually kind of surprising. You would think that there would be at least some, but we don't know what they looked like. As far as his family members go, I really do think that there is a lot of information out there, but a lot of times the problem is that nobody's really done the legwork to sort of bring it all together and you know, synthesize it in a place that people can sort of access. So,
yeah.
You know, there's stuff in the county records, I'm sure. But
there's a book waiting to be written about the Jeffersons, you know, the family. Because Peter Jefferson, his father, is a fascinating character.
Oh, I know. I mean, Peter Jefferson.
Yeah. No, what do you love about him? I mean, I know. tell me what comes to mind about his father.
I just think, well, part of what I always find fascinating about people is what we don't know. So there is that he is a little bit of a shadowy figure. So that of course is really fascinating to me. But also I think that he really. He was a younger son, and you might think that his life could have turned out a lot different, but he was very successful. And if you look at his will, he has everything just really organized. Everything all worked out. And so it's sort of fascinating to me to look at that and say, wow, this guy really had it going on.
I mean, and you can see that in his son, of course, as well, this incredible attention to detail. Maybe in the will you see the map maker, guy who made the first, helped to make the first real definitive map of the Virginia colony.
Yeah.
The Fry Jefferson map.
I never thought of that.
I mean, there's this incredible attention to making order and sense out of what first might appear to be disorder and chaos in the natural world. The map maker is the one who makes sense of it all.
Right. Yeah. And that's interesting because I never thought of that. But that's another thing. We do wonder, you know, the way Jefferson was, well, what were his parents like and what kinds of traits did he inherit or learn? Things did he learn from them? We just had a research fellow who gave a presentation on Randolph Jefferson, who was Jefferson's only brother. He was 12 years younger, I think. And there's this, kind of like with Jefferson's mother, there's this popular perception of Randolph. If people know anything about him, they think, oh, you know, he was a dullard, you know.
Yeah.
And he, it's so easy to sort of fit him into this neat slot of, okay, Jefferson was the smart one and Randolph was the dumb one. But our research fellow was trying to make the point that, you know, we really actually, again, we've sort of leaped to a conclusion on that. And if you look at him, you know, don't focus on Jefferson, Thomas Jefferson. Just look at Randolph. He was a normal guy and he wasn't stupid. And he was very successful in his own right.
So yeah. So probably far from a dullard, truth be told.
No. And she made the point. She said, you know, actually, Thomas Jefferson is the abnormal one in this hearing, if you look at it a certain way.
Anna Burks, research librarian at Thomas Jefferson's Monticello. Check out the website, jeffersonlibrary.wordpress.com. Anna, thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome.
We'll take a break for local.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SevillePodcast.com for more.